Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey, everyone, and thank you for joining us, and welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast. We appreciate your support and have a special interview and episode for you today. So sit back, relax, and enjoy learning about sports and opportunities around the world. Here comes the music. I gotta let you go.
He goes, I'll give you $750,000 a year to sign with us.
Without right even now, showing off.
He goes, don't even walk over to the field.
Because I had no idea that my passport was even expired.
Let me tell you, I sent out 6,000 emails.
Gentlemen, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us, as athletes, were taught how to use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, Jay, get me out.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over it.
You finished the game with a broken hand?
Yeah, I finished the game with...
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
There are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey my last season.
Okay. For this episode, we revisit baseball, but in a very different angle. For this episode, we have two guests at the same time. It's going to be a three-person audio discussion with two individuals that bring a very different angle to the game of baseball. And those two people are Brian and Luke, and they're umpires. Brian and Luke have coined a fantastic name for themselves. All they did was flip their names around, and Brian Luke becomes Luke Brian. They travel around and do umpiring gigs all over the world in different, completely different settings than what you're probably expecting. They now become the Luke Brian Tour. Look, I mean, we've talked baseball before in a couple of episodes, but never have we brought in the umpire. The whole episode, we're going to dive into a couple of different things. We will talk specifically umpire a little bit, where we're going to kind of dive into that whole idea of why do we argue with them? What does it feel like to get yelled at by someone who swears they have a better angle on what's going on, or somebody who swears they know the rule better than these guys who have been trained thoroughly, or swear that that guy out there is trying to make sure that I lose? How do they deal with that? What's going through their head when that happens? I say in the interview, the only thing I've umped was men's slow pitch softball. And there's a reason why that's really the only thing I umped, because that was enough right there dealing with that. And I want to know, and I know a lot of you do too, what is it like to be there getting yelled at? What is it like to be an umpire? And on higher levels than that of slow pitch softball. We also are going to take into account how they've traveled. And like I said, they travel around the world and have done different umpiring gigs around the world. Obviously, for now, that's on a bit of a pause, but they get to bring in a different angle. They get to give us a bunch of different views of what baseball has been like in different areas of the world that they've umped in, which is awesome. They've been to Europe and Asia and bits in South America. So they have been all over the place, and they get to give us a great general look at a lot of different areas. Instead of diving deep on what's it like to play for 9 months in Japan, we now get to get a quick view of different places, what it's like to play here and to play there. Umpires also get to give us a really good perspective on safety. What's it like to be in a certain area of baseball? You know, as an umpire, you might get yelled at and screamed at by the people watching the game and swear you're out to get them. Eventually, you have to walk to your car. Eventually, you have to leave that field, and you no longer have that fence as a border between you and the person screaming at you. I would argue that an umpire has to have one of the best and strongest views and opinions on what areas are maybe a little more dangerous than others. Because if anyone's going to be at risk, sadly, it's the umpire. So with that being said, let's dive into this very wide-reaching, entertaining, and very enjoyable interview with my friends, umpires Luke and Brian, the Luke Brian Tour. But before we do that, there's a couple of reminders I got to give you. First, the social media you can always find Globally Ballin' on facebook.com/globallyballin', Instagram at globallyballinofficial, and Twitter at globallyballin'. In addition, you can now find us on Patreon at patreon.com/globallyballin'. We have a bunch of stuff on there. For as little as $2 a month, there's platforms for you. We had a request come in, or just a mention, that the music in the background during the interview was kind of throwing them off a little bit, and so they just suggested maybe revisiting that idea. And so we did, and we're like, wow, that's fair, let's check into it. And so we asked some of our other listeners and some other people we know, and then we got one of the worst things that could happen was a mix of answers. And so we didn't really gain any ground whatsoever. So instead, what we did is decided to offer an extra opportunity on Patreon. So if the music really keeps you from focusing, there is an option on Patreon. It's the lowest tier that allows you to get all of our interviews. We call them short and sweet. There's no music. There is no ads. It's just cut and dry the way some of you want. And then for those of you that do kind of enjoy the music, soothing, keeps you kind of locked in the conversation, which we've also heard, those will continue to be as they are. We might experiment with some different music in the background, but just keep in mind, if that's you, if the music really throws you off, there is a platform for it. And of course, let us know that that's you, and we can continue to keep that in mind. So go ahead and check that out if you haven't already, but otherwise you can always reach us on those social media links. Continue to keep an eye out for our recent episodes. And finally, if you enjoyed the show, a rating on Apple Podcasts, as well as maybe a short review, is huge for us. It really is. It helps get the word out. And obviously, I'm a firm believer that this word is a word that needs to get out. So any of those things that you could do, follow us on the social media, maybe a rating, maybe a review, and check out Patreon at least. All of those things would be greatly appreciated. So thank you, and enjoy the show.
Hello? Aaron, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, there you are. Yeah.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good. I don't know why it keeps butting you out, but are we both on?
I think. Luke, you there?
Yeah, I'm just admiring how Brian is figuring out how to deal with technology, and I'm confused with him and my 65-year-old dad.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we got it done. This is perfect. Awesome. All right. So to start off, let's have you guys introduce who you are and what you guys do.
Sure. Well, my name's Brian Herzog, and I umpired professionally in the minor leagues for 9 years, and had some international experience in Venezuela with my cohort here, Luke Hamilton.
That's me, the cohort, Luke Hamilton. Currently, I am a flight attendant for American Airlines based in Miami, and we are both involved in D1 college baseball. I'm umpiring a little bit on the side. I've been doing it for the last 3 years now, back at that. I also had professional experience, yada, yada, Venezuela, so on and so forth.
So how do you get started in umpiring? Do you start off playing, or is it a passion to umpire early on?
I had a passion in high school. I only did a couple of years, but I did it during the summer just for a little extra money. And after that, I didn't keep going with it right away. It wasn't until probably 5 years later or so, I was 23, that I got into umpiring high school baseball. And there's a few years after that I started talking with my dad, and he suggested going to professional umpire school, and that's how you would get into professional umpiring. And there's only two of those schools, and they're both in Florida, and they're both about 5 weeks long. And you have to go to that school, come out on the top, what's called an honor graduate, and that just means you go to the next level, which is to be evaluated by your hopefully future minor league evaluators and instructors. And if you by chance get in from there, then you start at the low level of the minor leagues, typically in rookie ball.
So do you have to go to that school to go to umpire college?
It's a 5-week school. Yeah, that's only to get into professional baseball. Yeah, you can. I mean, there's plenty of associations around the country that teach, instruct, and you know, maintain obviously all of the youth baseball that goes on around the country.
Okay, and so after you graduated and got done with that, what was your first stop? Where did you start off?
I was slated to go to Arizona League, but when I was actually at the airport, I had a promotion already because there was just some movement above me. So my first stop was in the Pioneer League. First professional game was in Billings, Montana.
Okay, and so who is that independent?
No, that's all after the steps of going through umpire school and then going to the evaluation course and then getting a job after that. So it's the second lowest level of the minor leagues.
Okay, and so how long were you up there?
1 year for myself. Luke, I think, did you go to the Gulf Coast League? Is that correct?
Yeah, I started in the Gulf Coast my first year. In A-ball, there's four levels A-ball, so to speak. And so I moved up one level every year and then spent 3 years in AA before I finished.
So is the rotation for...
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, my story is similar to Brian's in terms of how I started. Basically, I was in college. It was a summer job. One of my buddies let me borrow his equipment. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Did that for a couple of summers. And then after college, I was like, well, may as well try this umpire school thing that I've heard about and see if I can go anywhere. And if not, then I'll start my real life. And ended up making through the steps. I went a year after Brian did in 07 and kind of followed that path for 7 years until they said no more.
We actually met right in between when Luke went to umpire school and before he actually started his first job because his first assignment in the minor leagues in the Gulf Coast League because that league starts in June. So we actually met. He was just taking a road trip with a friend, I believe, and happened to know my partner that I was working with in the South Atlantic League and stopped by in the locker room. That's how we first met in 2007.
But to answer your question, I do believe most people don't grow up saying, I want to be a big league umpire. They kind of are playing baseball. They have interest in that way and then happen to fall into lack of skill or what have you. And that's probably the story of 99% of most umpires. They played and eventually umpired down the road.
Yeah. So even, you know, you mentioned, I think both of you said it, that you enjoyed it or found some sort of enjoyment. Otherwise you wouldn't keep going. But from the outside, somebody who hasn't umped, I can't imagine. I mean, the only thing I've ever done was men's slow pitch softball, and that was the dumbest thing I could have done because nobody's ever happy in that league. And so I can't imagine having fun or enjoying because it seems like you're always the bad guy.
Yeah, you're the bad guy in a lot of situations, yeah. But, you know, it's a new aspect of the game, I guess I would say, in that sense. And I enjoyed it specifically because I thought I knew so much about the game because I'd grown up in it. Like, I started from a very young age. I don't remember what age, but and then I played into high school and I didn't play college ball or anything, but it was obviously I've enjoyed this game my entire life. And, you know, there are certain things that you learn in Little League or at a young age, like tie goes to the runner or a bunch of different stuff that kind of just gets spewed out at, you know, youth baseball games. And I wanted to actually learn it. I didn't want to just hear, you know, what a rule was from someone else who didn't necessarily have the qualifications to teach me that. I wanted to get deeper into it. And the deepest you can possibly get is going to 5 week school and be immersed in it for just an incredibly long time. And then getting to the end of that 5 week school. And hopefully that's just the beginning of your journey if you actually get into minor league baseball.
I think the challenge for a lot of umpires, big leagues all the way through little leagues, is the draw to it is to be perfect. And you strive to like get the calls right, be in good position. You see those pitches or plays, and there's a great satisfaction when you obviously one team's not going to like it, but when you see the pitch or the play and you know you got it right, and replay's going to show you're right. There's great satisfaction in that.
So you mentioned not being perfect, and of course nobody is, but there's always push for, well, why don't we just put a computer out there? That'll be perfect. What are a current umpire position on that?
I think that, yeah, this is an interesting subject. I love this. I'm really glad you brought it up. I think we've already seen what's going to happen when a computer gets put in place. We had in 2013, we had replay put into place. 2014, we had expanded replay. And everyone, and even the current narrative is still this, but all these announcers I hear saying, well, there's not that many arguments out there. There's not as many ejections. And the exact opposite is true. We saw ejections go up after replay was implemented with a direct correlation to arguing already replayed calls. So the most statistically accurate call on the field is actually the number the number two most common reason for being ejected. So it's,
really?
It's not the accuracy. Yeah, it's not the accuracy. Yeah, and if you close call sports is a wonderful, I don't know if you know much about them, but close call sports is they track ejections and whether the ejection was correct based on whether the call was correct and such. They have a draft. They have everything. It's a umpire ejection fantasy league. But closecallsports.com is a wonderful resource for that. And I've talked with Gil there at Close Call Sports quite a bit. And, you know, because I want to know what's happening after this type of system gets put into place. And we've already started to see some of the results of putting a computer now in charge of balls and strikes. You've seen it in the Atlantic League so far. It didn't take, but let's see, the first ejection was the first inning of the first game on the very first day that they used the computer. They've started to use it in fall league now and a little bit. And I've read a few articles on that and players are not happy with that. So everyone's going to find something to be upset about, whether it's already been looked at, you know, I'm obviously equating computers with the replay and everything, but we get to look at it on a computer and, you know, it can still be called correct, but there's still so many people getting ejected over it. So it's obviously, there's no correlation with the correctness of the call and whether someone's going to get ejected or not, at least that I've seen so far. So it is a really interesting situation, and I kind of welcome it, but if they do choose to put it into play, I hope they use it for a full year or whatnot and not kind of rebound the next month and go, okay, this isn't what we were waiting for, or this isn't what we thought was going to happen type of thing. I think you would see baseball fundamentally change, honestly, because you're going to get pitchers who just can bury a 12-6 curveball in the dirt, and because it fell through the strike zone, it's going to be a strike, and the umpire's not going to have any, you know, I know it nicked the strike zone, but the umpire's not going to have any say in whether they call it a strike or not anymore. And hitters can't hit that. So, and then that also would take away, in my opinion, the art of catching, you know, like, why do you have to be good at catching anymore and making pitches look good? Yeah. It's a really interesting subject. To get umpires talking about, that's for sure. Luke, I don't know if you have an opinion on that beyond that, but
the only insight that I had was talking, and you see video of this. It's on YouTube, probably pretty easy to search, in the Atlantic League. You see the umpires back there waiting until they get the command of what the call is going to be, ball or strike. And they're joking with the catcher the whole time. Well, TrackMan got that one right. Oh, sorry, guys. That's a strike. Or you know, whatever the case is, that you know, everybody's disagreeing with the umpire. The umpires are disagreeing with the quote-unquote umpire in their ear because that's not humanly a strike, or that should have been called a strike, vice versa. So it is. I don't care what system's in place, human or computer. I think people fundamentally disagree with umpires because that's how we've always been.
Meaning, so yeah, it doesn't matter what's there. If it's a computer or a person, somebody's going to get mad. Somebody's going to argue with it.
Yeah.
All right. So after you guys get started, where does your journey take you as you continue on umpiring?
From here on out, or from when we started our...
Yeah, from where you started off.
Where we started off. Yeah. My journey went from the, like I said, I was almost in the rookie ball Arizona League, but then I went to the Pioneer League. The year after that, I went to the South Atlantic League. Spent a year in the Cal League. So I spent 3 years in A-ball. Then I spent 3 years in AA after that in the Texas League, and 3 years in AAA in the Pacific Coast League. So from 2006 to 2014 was my professional career.
Okay.
I kind of summarized it quickly, but I spent 4 years in A-ball just moving up the steps, and then spent the last 3 years in AA and Eastern League. My last year was 2013 is when I got out of pro baseball. And then I took a four-year, a hiatus. I won't go into all these details, but basically 2014, I became a flight attendant.
Okay.
And then in the fall of 2015, I hadn't umpired a game since the fall of 2013. So I guess 2 years off. I then umpired in the Finnish national finals in the beginning of September of 2015, just because I was umpiring with one of our buddies from Scotland who's going to be there. And so it kind of created the joy of umpiring back again to what it's led to now as getting involved in college baseball and umpiring here in the state.
Okay, so you guys at least done professionally over here, 13, 14, that kind of time. And then you know, you're Moving on a little bit, what are you doing right now as far as umpiring?
Yeah, well, the last couple of years we have, and this is all because of Luke and his position as a flight attendant. He asked if I'd like to be on his companion pass for a good while, and I spent about a year and a half on it. And he, obviously, Luke has umpired in more countries than I have because he started with, like you just said, the Finnish national finals. Luke, I think you've umpired in Sweden as well. With our friend Seth. And so he had a lot more opportunities to get going. And then once he got going, he invited me to one of the tournaments over there. So more recently, we've worked in Austria together. And then our second Austria trip actually turned into a kind of dual tournament trip where we then flew over to London and had some great times, worked a tournament over there, and then did a little car trip and saw we saw Stonehenge and the White Cliffs of Dover and a bunch of castles. Luke's huge on castles. Brought both the wives for that one. And then the same year we umpired in Taiwan, and then just a few months ago we didn't bring anything back. We're free and clear, but we umpired in China in 2019. So I guess I don't have much to add. You asked what we're doing now. Basically, the main focus is college baseball season from February through May every year. And then as far as the other international stuff that we've done, we've even had offers to go over to Singapore and Hong Kong as well. They do some, their seasons are pretty much, they're a hot climate year round. So they have tournaments and Thanksgiving and Christmas tournaments and stuff like that. So there's opportunities there that we haven't done yet, but certainly will in the future.
Yeah, certainly on our list to do. And yeah, I guess I went right into international, but just because of I've listened to a few of your podcasts now, and, yeah. And that's mostly what you do. But we're mostly into our money making season. I guess would be the college season. You know, that's where that's a big deal for us. Last year I worked the Division II College World Series, and I was going back this year, but obviously we've had some issues with coronavirus lately. So the
Corona canceled.
The day that they canceled the March Madness tournament, the rest of the March Madness tournament, they also canceled the rest of our seasons. So that was very unfortunate, but I'm hoping we can maybe get something internationally if this all calms down by the end of the year, maybe get a tournament in. But I only have 2 weekends in this year, unfortunately, so 8 games, and Luke got 4 weekends in as far as NCAA. Baseball goes.
So let's talk a little bit about the differences between these areas of baseball spanning from Europe to Far East Asia. What have been, well, let's start here. What's the highest level passion in baseball in general out of all those areas that you've seen outside of the United States?
Venezuela, hands down. Brian,
yeah.
Can expand.
No, that's exactly, and I was listening to your last podcast with Corey Reardon too. I had him for 4 years. Didn't have him in Venezuela, but then I was looking through his career. And for us going to Venezuela, man, it was, that's a tough year. You have one season on either end, and then you have your off season when you spend with your family normally, but you're spending it, in a different country.
Yeah.
And just many props to Corey, because I was looking at his career and he has two to three straight years doing that type of thing. And that is a very tough life to live.
Absolutely.
And doing it in so many more in a row, so many more different countries in a row with, I think he did Korean, CPPL in Taiwan. And then he did Venezuela, I believe, if I remember correctly. But, and then even the year that he did Venezuela, and I think he would probably agree. All of the teams over in the Asias are crazy as far as fans goes too, and organized chants and stuff like that, just like soccer. But they have that, and they have a lot of that in Venezuela too, and it is passionate. It's crazy. You see some things that you'd never think to see before. Luke and I never had to deal with it, but we did have one of our other, there was 4 Americans down there, and one of our other partners down there, he had to leave the field underneath police escorts where they have the shields covering the entire crew of umpires because people are throwing things down onto the field and stuff. So it's very intense. I remember working in that exact same stadium in Caracas where I didn't know what was going on yet, but the two teams, it's probably 50% Caracas fans and about 50% Magallanes fans, which are, it's like the Yankees Red Sox matchup down there. And this is their big leagues. And all of a sudden I saw all this, you know, out in the grandstands, I saw this blank space because all the certain fans were going down closer to the field and certain fans were going up to the top. And then out of the blue, they just start throwing crap at each other. And I was like, you gotta be, I mean, beer bottles, your liquor bottles, everything. And I'm like, is this going to be a normal night? This is my first week, you know? So it's, I would definitely agree. I guess Venezuela is hands down the craziest and most passionate fans that we've seen.
Okay. And I kind of figured that the only thing that, I don't know if it was in your list of places that I would think maybe compares would be Japan, but I don't know if that's on your list or not.
Well, have you, Luke?
No, we haven't done Japan, but when we went to Taiwan a couple of years ago, we went to a professional Taiwanese game there locally, and man, it was there, the difference between there and Venezuela's just chaos. You know, people are into the game, but they're just, there's no rhythm. They get excited about what's going on, they're paying attention. Taiwan, every single batter has some sort of a theme song, and the crowd is jamming out hardcore. And we're talking not just 30 seconds like a walk-up song. It's 2 or 3 minutes. So during the whole at bat, they are just cheering and rocking and clapping, and they've got it all going on. And it's beautiful music, and it's incredible excitement versus, you know, Venezuela. They get you hear the soccer game, the Zuzuela. I can't even say it.
Vuvuzelas.
They got those.
Vuvuzelas.
Thank you. The Vuvuzelas. I got it right that time. So yeah, that was an experience in a Taiwanese professional game, but obviously a lot higher than the level of which we were umpiring whilst we were there.
When I think baseball, I definitely think Asia and then the Venezuela, Dominican Republic, that kind of Central America kind of area at least. But what I don't think is Europe. And so how does Europe compare when it comes to baseball?
It really doesn't. Baseball is such a fledgling sport in Europe that I don't think it compares to the Asian market whatsoever. Now, it is definitely progressed and definitely, we haven't experienced this yet firsthand, but from umpires we know over there, the Netherlands has a pretty cool professional league.
Yeah.
Obviously, some big league players have come from there. Germany is also, shockingly, well-run organization. They've got a lot of good players. Those would be the two standouts. But as far as your highest level in Britain and Austria and some of these, in Switzerland, some of these other countries, they're not near to that level.
And a lot that we're umpiring over there too, isn't the same thing that we have umpired in the States. You know, we did our second tournament that we worked in Austria, or not the goal, but one major factor was that we were able to add on that tournament in London as well. Well, it was a very young youth tournament. I can't remember the kid's age. They were probably 10 to 12, you know, so it's that's apples and oranges as far as trying to compare them for sure. It's not a CPBL type of game that's over in China or Taiwan.
I would say though, we went over when I was with a different fellow. Thomas Haywood was there again. Our main person hooked us up with some league play in Switzerland, and I got another American fella, our mutual friend Seth Hansen, to come with us as well. And so we worked a weekend in the Switzerland league, and we're talking, our locker room was changing in a cow barn. I mean, it was not being used at the time, but the fields are kind of makeshift somewhat. I mean, you kind of have, hey, you hit it over the right field fence, it's only 150 feet, that's a single. I mean, stuff like that. It's a much different environment than playing in the stadiums and TV games that we're used to seeing in Japan or Asia, those kind of markets.
How does
we did not have replay capabilities.
No, I assume. How can you compare the treatment of umpires throughout these different leagues?
I have a quick story for this. Interestingly enough, this Switzerland league, again, I'll just, because we just talked about this, that this weekend, myself, Seth, we're both former pro guys, we're over here umpiring. And, you know, I remember them giving Seth a really hard time at one point. And I, you know, as an umpire, I didn't see anything wrong. I've seen thousands of games and what have you. And these guys were really, you know, finally a guy got called on a strike three. And I'm like, where is that pitch? What's wrong with that? And, you know, the guy, that's down. That's definitely down. And I'm just thinking to myself, you are used to having players from other teams who have zero umpire experience. It's kind of like what I hear you saying in your experience of umpiring slow pitch softball. If you don't have any, and I've done that too, and that's a terrible experience. But, you know, I had former training. I knew where to be. I could anticipate plays and things like that. This guy, you know, is used to those kind of people out there that are just standing behind home plate. They don't know how to get a proper head position to call pitches or to call plays on the bases. And then usually it's a one man, not even a two man. And they're yelling at us as professional umpires. There's got to be a difference. You've got to be able to say, oh, these guys know what they're doing. But yeah. I truly believe ingrained, and I think back in my playing days when I was younger, I don't remember any umpires. I just knew that if they missed the call, then I didn't like it. You know, I didn't pay attention to how good they looked or what have you. But again, that's, I think, most people's perspective, whether in the States or overseas, and unless they've been taught or has some kind of a background with an umpire to know better.
Yeah, and another one is Venezuela's kind of like being thrown in the deep end of the pool. You never know. You just never know what's going to happen down there. You know, different leagues carry out different punishments in certain ways or not, and players will react based on players will act based on if they know they're going to be suspended or fined or whatnot. But Venezuela is a great one to, you know, they typically send you there around AA, AAA time because you're really going to see some high level intensity in intense situations. And when you can work under those situations, you can come back and it's just when the entire level of the situation, as far as adrenaline and whatnot, comes down, it's just not quite as hard. I don't want to say it's not quite as hard, but it's just, you know, you're able to manage your emotions better and what you're going to say, what's going to come out of your mouth next, because obviously everything you say during an argument can either escalate or de-escalate it, and we're always at the de-escalated.
And so one thing that, you know, I always wonder is when you know you've made a wrong call, and it maybe not game changing, but it, you know, it was wrong and you know it affected it, and they're mad and they're upset. How do you stand there? And you know you can't really reverse it in certain situations. What's your mindset? What are you trained to do? Is it deny until you die, or do you tell them you screwed up? What do you do?
I think that depends on, well, it depends on who you're talking to, for one, because you have, in most of those situations, it might be a pitch that you wish you could have back or something like that. And if you're working with a great catcher, you know, I might treat that situation differently than if, I'll just throw him out since I had him. So I had Josh Donaldson back when he was a catcher.
Oh.
And as far as if I think I missed a pitch versus him thinking I missed a pitch, he wasn't a great guy to have this back and forth interaction with. And I would not tell him that I think I missed a pitch, because in turn, I know his attitude, and he will very likely turn that around into a situation and say something where I have to eject him. And that's my ultimate goal, is I don't want to end up ejecting him. You also have wonderful catchers who are not going to turn it around and treat you that way. And if you can, you know, that buys you a lot of credit with these guys too. If I could tell you that I think I missed a pitch, you know, you're going to believe me the next time when I say, listen, I told you I thought I missed a pitch. I'm honest with you when I think I missed a pitch. That pitch is there, you know, or not there or whatnot. So it really depends on the situation, to be honest. But there are a lot of such wonderful catchers out there that, you know, you have such a good working relationship with them that you can have those honest conversations with. Those are the guys we love working with. And obviously, they can block a ball and protect you. They're a really great catcher too. We love those guys. So
I'm a firm believer that regardless of whether you got the call right or not, somebody's going to be mad and yell at you. And they're 100% sure the other way, that the call is safe instead of out. And so let's say I have a manager or coach or player, and they're just adamant and they're like, Luke, you missed that. And I'll agree with them. I'll just say, okay. And they're like, I'm not going to sit there and say I'm 100% right. Your example was, if I know that I missed the call, if I feel like, oh shoot, I don't think that I got that one right, then I'm like, hey, maybe you're right. Maybe I missed it. That's what I had on that one. And some smart manager or coach will tell you, well, hey, I need you to work harder or get a position or, you know, take your time or whatever, because they know that's why I may have missed that call. So I don't believe that just because you have a pretty good feeling that you missed it, that it's okay to let them go on and, you know, you take a barrage of hits. I disagree with that wholeheartedly, because there's too many times where I have gotten the call right. If we had replay, it proved it. And, you know, they weren't convinced until it's all later. And they're never going to come back and say, hey, sorry about that. My bad. You're right. And that doesn't happen. Mm. So I'm not going to take the abuse to begin with.
And sometimes it depends on the type of play too, because sometimes our actions are going right into the mental thought process. Okay, was this a pulled foot at first base? Then my plate umpire might have had a good look at the pulled foot. And kind of going through these mental checklists, you know, if I'm working three man, could my third umpire have had a good look at that? So there's different types of plays too, where, you know, I was just talking about pitches, but there's so many different types of plays where we could end up getting together on it. You know, and if you know beyond the shadow of a doubt that you missed missed it. And this was a pulled foot situation. And, you know, everyone's reaction is like, oh, maybe I'm the only one who saw it that way. You know, then our minds go into kind of our mental checklist of, is this a play we can get together on? Because there are certain plays that you can't get together on because changing it causes more problems than you know, we would have loved to get it right in the first place, but changing it can cause more problems than leaving it to where, you know, the way it was called originally.
This episode is also brought to you by our friends over at Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Lewisville, Texas, brought to you by Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to bring success to the lives of young men in ways in which they may have not reached that success otherwise. One of the ways in which they do this is through their professional basketball team, the Lewisville Yellow Jackets, who play in TBL or the Basketball League. Make sure you go check out Creating Young Minds on all major platforms, including Facebook and LinkedIn. I encourage you to dive more into the mission of Creating Young Minds as they strive to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. Thank you.
So I briefly caught, either a year or two ago, briefly caught just a piece of a Little League game, and I remember hearing some of the players yelling, and like they're what, like 13, 14? They're younger than that. We're talking like 11, 12. And I wonder, and I don't know if you can compare it long term or not, I don't know what your experience would have been in Little League, but have you seen any sort of change with the willingness for a young man, young player to yell right at your face as opposed to what you've had before or not?
I'd say at different levels there is that. I think in youth baseball, you know, we're seeing a lot more. We're in there. So I say this on the front end of we are in an official shortage, and it's not just baseball. We're having a huge official shortage. So I would say overall, and I don't know that it players specifically yelling umpires or whatnot, we typically don't have a problem with a lot of the on-field stuff because those are people right there. They're well, in professional baseball, you know, they're just other coworkers and we're working with them. But at the lower levels, I think it's a result what they're hearing out of the stand. They're going to copy their parents and what their parents are doing. And there's a lot of misinformation these days that is coming down from, you know, your I'm not trying to call them out specifically, but just because I'm thinking of runners lane interference last year in the World Series, you know, your Joe Bucks and John Smoltz that are baseball experts, but not rules expert. And I can guarantee you, and we didn't have a high school season this year, but if we had a high school season this year, I guarantee based on a lot that they said, claiming that the umpire was wrong, claiming they didn't understand why this runner's lane interference was called. It was a very cut and dry runner's lane interference. But they speak to millions and millions of people by being on air, and we hear the same stuff at youth baseball tournaments. So there's all this misinformation out there that basically people have learned, and I'm not trying to sure, downplay them or you know, get on them about this, but that they've learned at the Little League level and never been told different, and so they think that's the rule, and that's just not fact. So, you know, I see a lot of umpires leaving because of this type of thing. I don't know that it is directly because of an 11 or 12 year old, I guess, yelling at them on the field. I hear more of the parents that might follow you to your car afterwards or something like that, and they just don't, you know, a lot of umpires just don't want to put up with it anymore. So I think there's a correlation. I think it's I don't see as many as the players are doing that versus the parents and maybe coaching staffs. What I actually see from a lot of the kids, because they get embarrassed by their parents in the stands, is I've heard more apologies lately. You know, I've had catchers apologize to me. You know, I'm sorry, that was my dad. You know, so I think that a lot of the kids are actually seeing what's going on. And I think you'd be surprised that, yeah, how many kids are actually apologizing for different actions. I had a college game a couple of years ago at a tournament in Florida. And, the count was off by one pitch. I checked with a book. I got it right. And some college kid worked, you know, playing summer ball, yells out, that's why, you know, that's why you're a summer ball ump. I was like, excuse me. I mean, it's like, if you knew, this person's experience, and my other umpire in the field, he got in him a little bit. He said, listen, I'm a D1 umpire out here, and you're looking at a former AAA crew chief back there. How about a little bit of respect? You know, so, and the catcher came out the next half inning, and I had a problem with that coach, not just that player who popped off, but I had a problem with the coach. And the catcher came out, apologized for his teammate's actions. And I said, yeah, man, I tell you what, I've had a really great time working with you. You know, you protect me back here. You make pitches look great. You give me a good look. But, and most of you are actually pretty decent. You know, I just had a problem with coach that once. And he goes, and then this kid, he goes, yeah, that's his son. So, you know, it all comes down from what they're going to see, you know, and what they're modeled at home. But I think, sorry, go ahead, Luke.
Well, I'm tacking on again, kind of proving the point of what I said earlier about the Switzerland example. We're just ingrained to disagree with umpires, and people don't care about your experience. They don't realize how good you are and that you're well overqualified. They just see you umpiring a summer ball game and they just make assumptions because you made a call they didn't like, or you know, whatever the case is, you know, your example of the count and confirming that you got the count correct. Big league umpires take flack all the time. These guys are the best of the best. I mean, it's just people don't understand how good those big league umpires are, but yet they still get criticized by some armchair baseball fan who thinks he knows how to umpire better than anybody's ever seen. And it does blow you away. You know, umpires out there, they need the respect. They have to force the respect. Otherwise, you're out of the game. But nobody really does. And at the lower levels you get, those little kids that you saw and yelling at the umpire, I mean, who knows how old they were, but those can be the toughest games to work because of the parents and the kids, and they think they're playing in Yankee Stadium and they're going all the way to the big league. So it does blow me away looking back at it.
Let's say you
do. That's kind of why we've actually dubbed ourselves the world's okayest umpires, because that's about as good as we can hope to get in.
I love that.
In the public's eyes. So
that is, it does seem to be like, it's a joke, but it does seem like as an umpire, you're like, well, I can't really strive for in their eyes to be perfect because I never will be for them.
Right. I mean, that's exactly it. It's just, you know, we have quite a bit of experience under our belts, but you know, for example, in an international tournament we did last year, we were picked as the two least experienced umpires by one of the, I can't even remember what he was. He was involved in the organization of the league, but they didn't like how we handled a rain situation. And we were dubbed the two least experienced umpires, and we were the two most experienced umpires. So, you know, it's, unless you have, I guess, some knowledge in that field, it's not really their place to say, I suppose. I don't know how to better say that, honestly.
Let's say you do get something wrong, and it's a big one, and at a higher level, I mean, you're double A's or whatever. Let's say you do actually get something pretty wrong. What comes next? Is there potential to be demoted? Is it like a ladder thing where, you know, you keep making mistakes here, you're going down a couple notches? How does that work?
It's up or out. Yeah, sorry, go for it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm just going to take it for you. But yeah, there's no demotion, unfortunately. You either move up. They may let you simmer at a level for a while because either you're too young, you need a little more experience, but it's not just about like making one wrong call and your career's over. You know, making an out call or missing a call at first base is a little different than messing up a protest. There's variations of that. But in general, you know, these guys have a basic guideline they need to follow, and it gets pretty tight. The higher up you get, they're really nitpicking the higher up you go. So
yeah, the guidelines they have, you essentially have 3 years at each level to get to the next level.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so it's typically an up or out situation, or you could just simmer at that level longer, but it's different. So it's kind of different in the sense of a player's going to go up and down, I guess, stretch out their career a little longer just by going up and down type of. I can't go now to, you know, like a Corey Reardon or something like that. I can't go overseas, you know, to the CPBL or Korea or play in the Atlantic League and try to get back into minor league baseball. You have your years at each level. You're going up or you're going to be released after that. Obviously, as you go higher, the bottleneck gets tighter. And so, you know, you're just going to be released after that. There is no way back into professional baseball for us, I guess, is what I'm saying. You can't just like a player go somewhere else, get a little more experience and then go back.
Interesting.
I don't want to get too all over the place for you because you do an amazing job at these interviews. I've gotten to listen to a few of them the last couple of days, and your organization and everything. I love the thoughtfulness, everything you put into it. All right. Okay. So after that promo, just to go back and not get too far off the wagon, but you were asking about the relationships, how we do stuff. And I think that's the most important thing when it comes to handling situations and getting people to like our call or not. We both work in college baseball, and there's guys that we have worked with and they've been around for 20, 30 years in some cases, and they kick a call and nobody argues because they have time. You can't teach time is a phrase we always use in umpiring. They've built the relationships and they're good with the coaches, so the coaches aren't going to argue. They told their players, don't argue with that umpire, versus a new hotshot who comes out there and doesn't miss a call, doesn't miss a pitch, and is absolutely perfect, and he's getting raked over the coals. And so that perception does go a long way, building those relationships with coaches at the college level to kind of have an idea to say, hey, you know, this guy has put in his work and we're going to give him grace if we call didn't go our way.
versus a new guy.
And that must be, yeah. I would assume that that would probably be part of the reason why they keep you at a league, at least up the ladder at a certain amount of time before you can go anywhere else.
Absolutely.
A big
yeah,
part of it.
Relationships are huge.
Relationships are huge. But I think the when you're early on in pro baseball, they really want you to work on seeing pitches, developing your strike zone. You naturally are going to get yourself in situations, whether you miss a call or not. How are you handling that? How do you deal with life on the road? That's something that people don't realize. You know, pro baseball players, pro athletes in general, they're at home half the year. For baseball especially, we'll stay with that. But umpires, they never have a home game. They're on the road for 140 games. You know, we leave for spring training in the beginning of March, and we are gone until sometime in September. And so for those 6 or 7 months, we don't have a home. We live in hotel rooms. How are you going to deal with life like that? Being away from family and friends, being with just, you know, Brian and I work two-man in A-ball. You get to work with a three-man crew in AA. So it's a lot of travel. It's a lot of isolation. It's a lot of negativity that you're around. And you may be awesome on the field, but that life just may not be for you. And so they want to make sure that you've gone through all the fires that they can put you through in the minor leagues before they say, all right, this guy's ready to get paid and be a big league umpire and be in the spotlight, national television.
So if you're a minor league ump, do you need another job, or are people choosing to do that because it's so cut and dry seasonal? I would assume, it could be totally wrong, could be cut and dry, pretty seasonal. Are people picking up things on the side, or do they do that because they want to, or do they have to typically?
Yeah, typically we have to make ends meet in the off season for sure. I know both Luke and I, we did a lot of work for FedEx during our time. That's actually how I got to go to umpire school, is I owned my own FedEx route. You know, I hired someone for 5 weeks while I was gone, and then I got back. And that meant it was also an off-season job for me whenever I would come home. So I sold that route a few years in, but I know Luke worked for them as well during the peak season, since that peak season happens to fall in the off-season. But I've done whatever it takes to make ends meet, anywhere from the, you know, FedEx to, I've been on workman's comp for an off season to delivering pizzas. If that's the job you can get for the off season, because it becomes tough. It becomes tough to get a job without lying, because who wants to hire you for 5 months
without lying?
When
absolutely.
They know you're just going to, yeah. When you're just going to have to leave again. So you either have to lie by omission and just, you know, yeah, you're right. That last thing on my resume is pretty cool. I was a minor league umpire, and I still am, you know, but they don't know that. So if you lie by omission, then you kind of burn the bridge later, because they don't want to hire you the next year. If you lie outright, they for sure don't want to hire you, you know, the next year. And then just you come to them in a few months and say, I got to go. But yeah, I mean, I've personally done anything all across the board. Even right now, I maintain to do some delivery work for Amazon. Typically the Christmas season is obviously the biggest one, but right now with coronavirus too, it remains an essential job. So I'm able to get a little bit of work in.
I don't know a minor league umpire unless they're, you know, there's guys that get in when they're 19, 20, or they're super young. Maybe they can live with their parents and be supported by them. Mm-hmm. But I'd say high 99% plus have to have an off season job, waiting tables, substitute teaching, FedEx delivery service, Uber. I mean, it's growing as far as things that are flexible that you don't have to worry about being gone during the season. But a lot of guys in warmer climates, they will umpire year round. There's guys here in Florida that are minor league guys that I work with. They'll do college baseball before they go to spring training. I was guilty of doing that as well. But then even more than that, they'll umpire little kids games. I mean, these guys are AA, AAA guys that are out there working little kids games just to do an off season job. So you really don't make a paycheck worth your time until you get to the big leagues. Even in AAA, those guys usually by that time have families to try and support. And that's really impossible to do on a minor league salary, because we're only paid during the season.
And so you must, I mean, we really are talking about people who are passionate about umpiring at least a little bit or a lot bit, if they're willing to do, you know, they got to pick stuff up on the side just to keep going during the season.
I would argue too passionate, honestly. You know, I appreciate those guys. But I agree. I tell you one thing, minor league baseball taught me a lot. And one thing about umpiring, it's an incredible life skill. And I heard that all the time, but I never really understood it until I became a flight attendant. And there's not a situation that you can throw to me, real life and simulation, that is going to be overwhelming, because I've been in Venezuela. I've been on a baseball field. And so those situations are way more intense than anything I can experience there. I feel like in life, and there's other aspects of it too, like how to treat people, how to deal with hostile situations. You could go on. People that love to umpire, I'll be honest, it became a job. I kind of lost my
my passion for umpiring toward the end of my career in professional baseball. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I went over and got connected with the European guys, and because of my flight benefits, would go over and work tournaments with them or a weekend here and there, that I really started to get that passion back of umpiring that I went to umpire school to begin with. And it's fun again. I really enjoy it now. Now, I don't overdo it, but the guys that umpire full-time, all the time, the great guys, a lot of respect for them because it's a lot of hard work and they're fun to talk to and hear their stories. And they do have to have a passion for it. I'd say most umpires at the end of the day do.
Yeah. Actually, right after you reached out to me, a local umpire from the Seattle area reached out and he just started a new podcast called Umpire Inspired. And his first guest, his name is Bobby Tassoni. And I met Bobby when I was working down in Arizona in between when he went to umpire school and when he worked his first actual professional game. So basically like the same timing of when I met Luke in his career, in our careers. And Bobby mentioned he had worked, I can't remember the exact number, but it was over 500 games in the year before he got into minor league baseball. And that's, I mean, I honestly can't fathom that anymore. Having spent 9 years in the minor leagues and working one game per day, I can't imagine working that many double headers, triple headers. And I know a lot of guys who work four or five, you know, sometimes rarely, but sometimes six games in a day, you know. And a lot of the thing is with the, there are a lot of times where we'd love to get fresher legs on the field and minds on the field, because you know, when you haven't worked five games, you work a sixth game, you're not going to be as sharp as your first game. But like I said, we're in an umpire shortage, and you know, we have to use the umpires that we have, and they work an incredible amount of games that I personally can't even fathom that 500 game mark in a single year. So some of them are just absolutely insane with the amount of baseball that they work, because they're just very passionate about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that number is insane. I can't imagine that either.
Yeah.
All right. So is there anything about what you guys do or did that we haven't talked about that we should cover?
I don't know.
Luke. You guys go around a lot. Did we cover all the travel stuff that you think we should?
Well, that's the thing is, I think the biggest difference between us and what the other people that I've heard you interview, when it comes to our travel and our experience overseas and doing what we do, it's mostly going for a tournament a week at a time. It's not necessarily going over for a season. The only time I ever did that was Venezuela, and you've already covered the baseball player perspective of that. You know, that might be a different experience altogether. I mean, that experience is completely different than what we do now. But it's the but cool I, thing I about think, what we do.
Go ahead. Go for it. I think you were going right where I was going.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the uniqueness about what we do, and especially the guys in Europe, the umpires over there, who have become umpires sometime full time, were originally players, and some of them still play. And so it's cool because there's United States guys that will go over to Europe and play baseball at this, you know, in Switzerland or wherever their country is, end up making a life for themselves over there, and they become the umpire expert and the high end guy. And it's fun to hear all the tournaments and different aspects that they have, but that's their own world. We're trying to bridge the gap to get people to realize that if we are dealing with somebody in college, hey man, your life isn't over. You ever considered umpiring? Or I like what you're doing. Like, I'm going to really push guys to say, hey, you're a senior. You're not going to go pro. What about going to Europe? You know, we know people that you can go over there. It's not going to be a great living, but you can experience to go travel, which I believe is the number one thing for people to grow and experience this life is being able to travel. And sort of affords them to be able to do that, have that opportunity, and who knows where life will take them. So it may be through baseball, maybe through baseball and get them into umpiring, but there is an incredible avenue there if we can continue to market that and show people possible opportunities.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've heard consistently in the guys you've interviewed is that it's the perspective that kind of travel is able to bring to you, you know, versus we're just kind of living here in our own little world in the U.S. And that experience, you know, and I have Luke to thank for that, as well as just baseball in general in the minor leagues. But I have Luke to thank for the, you know, for being able to broaden my horizons and get out to Europe and Asia and places I never thought I would be able to visit, let alone have the chance to, you know, take this umpiring platform and use it to be able to go there under those pretenses, you know, umpire a tournament sometimes in London specifically, you know, umpire a doubleheader and then go spend 10 hours exploring the city with the Lions, you know, the travel aspect of it and getting to see the rest of the world is just amazing. And I do hope that
Now, you talked about those opportunities overseas, which is perfect. That is what we're all about. But one of my questions is, you also talked about how you were traveling on, since you're a flight attendant, you had the companion pass. Are these opportunities, for the most part, will they're going to be covering the travel? I mean, is the shortage big enough to where they'll cover travel from somebody in the United States to go over and umpire over there?
You know, that would be an amazing leap, I believe. But I believe even in America, umpires are looked at as a sunk cost, a necessary evil. So I have a hard time believing that any time in the near future that'd be the case. But that'd be something that, if we could get to that point, developing some kind of an umpire program where we're sending guys over to Europe to umpire for a summer to get experience before they get in the minor leagues or to put on a resume, that'd be a huge step.
So
most of the stuff right now that we do, I'm able to travel and we're able to travel very cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll usually pay for our own flights, which isn't that much. And then they'll take care of room and board when we're there. But if you do get paid, it all equals out about the same. Maybe they pay you and then, you know, you're paying for a place to stay. But again, this isn't like the high-end leagues. I know Italy's got a professional league as well, and they are very close-knit. Like, they don't want any outsiders in their group. And that typically is the case with a lot of European guys. And I honestly don't blame them. I'm not there. I've always said, there was one time, quick story with Luke, there was one time I had a London layover, and I basically packed my base umpire gear. I had my stuff, and I worked the championships, the different levels. I was like 15, 16, and 17-year-olds or something like that. And I filled in. I didn't get paid for this, but it was just kind of an extra experience. And these guys were excited to work four-man. But I was getting paid for my other jobs, so I had no problem. And I got to spend time with these guys. I did it because of the experience of being able to have fun with them. So that's usually their experience as well. They get paid to do some of these higher end tournaments. It's very rare that they're not going to encourage the cost of bringing over somebody from America because we're not that much better. So it is what it is.
Yeah. And as we started out, yeah, it's exactly, I was on Luke's companion pass, and it, you know, it cost us probably a couple hundred bucks a person to, as far as flying for that trip. But, you know, in the beginning, it was about trying to brand us. You know, Luke Bryan, I don't even think we mentioned that yet, but there's Luke and there's Brian. So we call the show the Luke Bryan Tour. I was helping Luke move from, he used to be flying out of New York and now he's flying out of Miami. And so I flew across the country because I was on his path and helped him drive down. And we hit the Florida Georgia line. And I was like, oh, Florida Georgia line, Luke Bryan, this is a thing. Let's make this a thing. So I think I used it as a hashtag for the first time. But anyway, so, you know, fast forward, as we started to make these trips, we didn't really have much overhead as far as getting over there, traveling there, and our lodging was taken care of and meals and such. And so in the beginning, when we just kind of had that thought process of, hey, let's make this Luke Bryan Tour a thing, it was not paid whatsoever. It was just exactly as Luke said. And then gradually, as I came off Luke's path, Luke got married, so he put the wife on the path. It makes sense. I get it. A little bitter, but I get it. But no, we were trying to kind of create that brand to where in the future people would want to, it would be worth it to them to bring us out. And we did just have our China one was that first experience where I was not on Luke's path anymore. So it was going to cost considerably more to do it. And we told them, listen, we can't afford to come do this. We could before because we were paying pennies on the dollar, but they, you know, it was valuable enough to them to pay for a little more, to pay for our flights and make sure our rooms were covered and stuff like that. Because in that specific tournament, the rooms were not covered the year before. So, you know, I guess the answer is we're slowly growing to where we want all these, everything, including flights, to be covered. I don't know how long that's going to be. That's just something we're going to be continually working on though, to get more umpires involved internationally. And we very well might, we almost were able to do it last year because we have a couple other umpires who are involved, in, one works for Alaska and one works for FedEx, and he flies for FedEx. So, you know, if someone also has flight benefits, that obviously helps out to where we might be able to bring a couple other umpires over and then start to make it a thing where, you know, people want to, I mean, some guys might be able to afford it themselves and they just want the experience, but yeah, we would really love to eventually have that type of stuff covered if we can
work at that point, I guess. The possibility of us being able to do that is only because the stuff that we're doing isn't that serious. It's not, you know, it's not like Venezuela. I mean, so we're able to say, hey, you know, if we can get the flights covered and your room and board covered, it's really a cheap vacation. You get to work baseball, yeah. Which we talked about umpires' passion anyway, but think about it this way. It's a lot cheaper to do this and travel here. And, you know, we get to work some baseball games too. That's kind of how we look at it right now, mm-hmm. as far as a getaway for a week or two or a long weekend. It's fun to experience and expose people to other things, like a baseball travel industry a little bit, but you have to work with them too.
Yeah, and we've even discussed more recently, you know, like a cruise or something like that. That's kind of not umpire themed, but has some classes or something like that where the umpires are getting a lot out of it. But also, you can also bring your spouse, and they don't have to. You know, I know what my wife does when she comes to a baseball game. She reads. She's not interested in the umpiring. She's not as interested in the baseball. So you know, now you can bring your spouse too, and it's a baseball trip for you, but it's just like a cruise for your. For the life, and you know, there's plenty of time with baseball, but there's plenty of time, just family time too. This might not be the best time to start that idea, considering coronavirus, but future maybe.
Something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Awesome, guys, appreciate it. Getting umpires on was on my list, just because we don't get to hear you very often, and we should, because you get to hear us.
Sorry, you heard too much of us. And no. I realize that you're going to have to cut probably more than half of this out. I understand. I do the same thing to Brian every time I had any conversation I have with him, actually.
All right. Thank you, guys. Stay safe.
Appreciate
stay healthy.
You, brother.
Appreciate it. And I'll send you guys this when it's all ready, okay?
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for all you do, man. Seriously, this is good stuff. I'm excited for what you've done and are going to be doing in the future with this. And hopefully we can promote the heck out of this and get people to listen. I've thoroughly enjoyed every episode I've listened to thus far.
Well, I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, really, really enjoyed it. Once you reached out, I listened to a few, and it's just pretty cool. Really, really fun to listen to. So
awesome. Thank you, guys.
Sure, bud.
All right, take care.
Yep,
see you down the road.
Bye. Bye.
Well, there you go. A perspective on baseball that maybe and hopefully you haven't heard before. Angle of being an umpire. I'm based here in Michigan. So when I think about a bad memory involving baseball and an umpire, I think of Armando Galarraga's near-perfect game and umpire Jim Joyce. I can remember back to that day in that very moment. And I can even remember back to some of those very negative and nasty things in my head immediately flooding my head after the call was made. And I think we've all experienced things like that. We've been so mad that we look back later on and go, wow, that was ridiculous. And yet, in that moment, if those thoughts are out, if we release those thoughts into yelling at the umpire, you can't take those back. And as the umpire, you're out there and you're just absorbing hit after hit after hit. And you're truly just out there trying to do your very best. And yet you continue to be bombarded with this. Umpires have got to be on everyone's top of the list when it comes to respect for individuals in the world of sports. Honestly, I don't know who else you need to put up there next to umpires. Referees. The negatives versus the positives that they experience, I can't imagine it's anywhere near 50-50. So because of that, I thank our guests for today, Luke Hamilton and Brian Herzog. I hope you enjoyed hearing their perspective on what it's like to be an umpire and what it is that they hear and see and experience and how they have to frame that in their head when negatives are thrown their way, as well as the inner fight that they have to be as perfect as possible. In addition, I hope we learned something about international baseball in a more general view. Like I said in the beginning, we're not specifically looking at what it's like to play in, say, the Japanese League for a certain amount of years, or a certain amount of months even. We're looking at baseball in a far more general view around the world. And so I hope you got that from our guests today. So thank you to Luke and Brian. I appreciate the time you gave to us and all your stories and everything. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you. Make sure you subscribe and follow us everywhere, because we will be back again with another episode shortly. Thank you. Hey everybody, thank you again for getting through another episode. We really appreciate it. I just want to quick redirect you to where you can find us one more time to kind of close out this whole episode. You can find us at facebook.com/globallyballin, Twitter @globallyballin, Instagram @globallyballinofficial. The name was taken. And patreon.com/globallyballin. Again, what you can find there is all of these episodes music free as well as ad free. And a bunch of other tiers that offer you a lot of other stuff. There is a ton of content available for you that you are not getting here that's out there on the Patreon page. So if you want to check that out, that would be great. And then, of course, again, if you like the show, we would really appreciate a rating and a review wherever you listen. I know I normally suggest Apple Podcasts, but if there's a way, you know, if you listen to it somewhere else and there's a way to rate it, that would be great as well. But any of that is very, very helpful and very much appreciated. It does take a lot of work putting these things together and editing them up and making it all mesh together and getting our interviews lined up and all this. So it takes a lot, but we really believe in it, and we encourage you, if you believe in it too, doing one of those things to help us out would be fantastic. Otherwise, simply you listening to our episodes coming out is a huge blessing to us. So thank you very much for supporting the show, and you'll get an episode from us here in the coming days.